Gentlemen, welcome to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, and I'm here today with the editor of the Libertarian Republic, who is not me. It's my editor, Keith Farrell. Keith, welcome to the show.
Hi, Austin. Thanks for having me. Always good to be here.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for coming on the show. Of course, I'm still the head of the podcast, but you're the head of the Libertarian Republic these days. How's it been going?
It's going good, man. You know, it's trench warfare. Every day is a different battle to try to get that information out there and, you know, got to deflect the haters and all that stuff.
We have an impossible crowd to please, because if you're a conservative, if you run a conservative website, man, they just march in lockstep. You just say Obama sucks and they'll share it 100 million times. But if you're a libertarian and you say Obama sucks, they'll say, where's the evidence of that? And Obama's an inside job. How dare you post that he wasn't an inside job?
You know? Right. And how dare you criticize Obama more than you criticize Republicans?
Exactly. How dare you criticize Republicans? And then I was like, how dare you criticize Republicans, but you don't criticize Democrats? So we just,
yep.
It seems like we can't win sometimes. We can't win. That's the battle we fight, because you know what? I can't change what I believe in, you know, because libertarians want me to. You know, I've always considered myself one, and there's nothing I can do about that. But, you know, there's this sort of like purge ethos that runs through our movement that's just very disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Litmus. And they all think they have the exact, you know, litmus test that can tell if you're truly a libertarian or not.
What I've noticed, this is what I wanted to say. I'm going to get this off my chest before we get to the news of the day. But the non-aggression principle people are very aggressive. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Well, some of these people would put landmines in their yards to kill Girl Scouts that crosses, as you've said yourself. So.
True, man. It's true, because, you know, a strict definition, according to the NAP, I can put landmines in my front yard if I want. And if a Girl Scout comes on here, well, you know, just caveat emptor, Girl Scout. You should have known better. Anyways, I'm trying to make fun of the idiots. Let's talk about something that's more important right now. And this is obviously of central importance to the libertarian movement, but also to the country as well and the future of liberty. And that's the campaign of Senator Rand Paul. Now, full disclosure aside, everybody who's listening to this podcast probably knows, but it's important for me to state that I am also a registered presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. So you could just, if you listen to everything that I'm saying today, if it sounds critical, then just note that, you know, there could potentially be some evil ulterior motive. But the real truth is that I don't have an evil ulterior motive. I'm running for president because I think that the Republican Party is rejecting Rand Paul and they're rejecting libertarian ideas. So I'm trying to go outside the system in order to sort of circumvent what the Republicans are doing to this message of liberty. But I brought Keith on the show today because Keith is just as knowledgeable as I am on a lot of these issues. I mean, he should be running for president, and you know, he'd probably be a better candidate than I am. But
maybe next time,
exactly. I want to talk about Rand Paul's campaign, and then we're going to talk about some of the other major candidates as well, Keith, and we're going to dissect what's going on right now. I guess in general, what happened? You know, Rand Paul was supposed to sort of, you know, come out into the lead and break out into the open, and this was supposed to be the libertarian moment. But now Donald Trump's ahead in the polls. What's going on?
I think it all comes down to messaging, Austin. If you look at Rand Paul for the years leading up to the campaign, he was doing really great messaging. You know, he was able to package himself as this populist champion of the people who was fighting the big government machine that was spying on us. It was wanted to kill us with drones, and he was the little man standing up for it. A lot of great packaging in messaging through all that. And I think, you know, that gave him the surge and the support to make him think he could run for president. I don't know if it's the people around him or if he's been getting bad advice or if he's just has some bad ideas, but ever since his campaign has launched, it just seems like that messaging has failed.
Yeah, one of the things that you and I kind of laughed at yesterday was the messaging that he said that free college is like being offered free heroin, which actually made a lot of people angry because, you know, a lot of people have been addicted to drugs and it doesn't quite compare the same way to a college education.
Right, and wanting to seek an education for yourself is not the same as wanting to shoot heroin either, so you offend both people in that statement.
Yes. One of the small little points that you and I came up with yesterday when we were chatting about this was the idea that Donald Trump takes horrible ideas and packages them beautifully, but Rand Paul takes beautiful ideas and packages them horribly. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, absolutely. Donald Trump is 100% messaging. There's no substance there. It's all rhetoric. He's just the way he packaged with the American conservative electorate. Whereas Rand Paul, he just doesn't know. I mean, half the time he's messaging one direction, like kind of conservative way, and then he's messaging libertarian, and it's kind of, it kind of seems to contradict. People call him a flip-flopper. Even when they have the same position, it's packaged differently. I think if you look at one of the debates where Donald Trump actually took Rand Paul's position on foreign policy, non-intervention, and presented it in a way that got the crowd going nuts. Rand Paul's been saying that for years, and nobody listens to him. The way Donald Trump was able to do that was he presented the idea of non-interventionism as something selfishly American, that why should we spend our money and our lives fixing their problems? That kind of resonates with the conservative base more than, oh, we should mind our own business and et cetera, et cetera. That sounds weak to the base.
Right, or that we shouldn't be involved in policing the world and things like that. I mean, it's funny because it's almost, you know, Donald Trump can say the same exact things that Rand Paul says, but people just like Donald Trump saying it more. And that mm-hmm. it just comes down to style over substance. It really is an issue of style. And one of the things that we've heard and seen out on the campaign trail is that Rand Paul just doesn't have that kind of likability, is that he gets fidgety, and he gets angry with people who want to take selfies with him, and he just seems irritable and upset and unhappy. And all of that is not good for a presidential candidate, because you have to like people, and you've got to like to talk to people and be willing to take crap from people and be willing to, you know, sort of take the heat, which is, you know, something I'm learning very much every single day in my own campaign.
And Trump has the advantage there from show business. I mean, he's used to having to put himself out there and get people to like him and deal with this, you know. Mm-hmm. Rand did a Senate campaign and he did it very well, but this is a whole new ball game. It's national level, you know, the whole new level of introspection and you know, just scrutiny that he has to go through.
I mean, the Libertarian Republic has always been, you know, friendly to Rand, and a lot of the stories that the Libertarian Republic has published have been sort of trying to chart Rand Paul's path to the nomination and seek a way that Rand Paul might be able to win. Now, I'm looking at the Real Clear Politics polling right now, where it places Trump. He just went up 9 points today. Trump is at 28.7%, Carson, 19.7%, Rubio, 12.7%, Cruz at 12%. Bush at 3.7% for Fiorina, 3.3% for Huckabee, 2.7% for Christie, 2.7% for Kasich, and 2.3% for Paul. Paul is behind Kasich, Christie, Huckabee, Fiorina, and Bush. I mean, I could understand why Trump, Carson, Rubio, and Cruz, but I mean,
right,
not beating Huckabee? I mean, I forget sometimes that Huckabee's even running. What happened?
I know. It's ridiculous.
I mean, I would never call for Rand to drop out, because, you know, a man's got to follow his convictions and do what he thinks is right. And, it, you know, but I just don't see a realistic theoretical path to the nomination for Rand. If there comes a point in the next few months, you know, before the convention in May, that I don't see a realistic path for the nomination with the Libertarian Party for me, then I'm certainly not going to go through all the pain and suffering to continue the campaign. It will show that that I wasn't able to generate enough populist support, and that there just weren't enough people interested in advancing my candidacy. That's because, you know, I want to be realistic. But one of the things that I don't have that Rand does have are a lot of yes men around me telling me, oh yeah, keep going, Rand. And they're, you know, since no one is employed by my campaign, everybody who works for me is a volunteer, you know, they're not all sitting around kissing my butt. They're all telling me, you know, if the hard truths about the realities that I'm up against. I mean, do you think that Rand Paul is just surrounded by yes men, and that's a big part of what's going on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think every politician has that to a degree, but I think it's clear that Rand has a lot of people pushing him in different directions. And I don't know what advice comes from where, but it just seems like he doesn't have the greatest people surrounding him when it comes to managing his campaign to begin with.
Can I tell you something? Now, this has nothing to do with like facts or like statistics. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to go and cite any empirical data off of this, Keith. But I'm going to tell you something, and you know, maybe you're. I know you pretend to be a little bit more conservative on certain things. And so maybe this isn't something that will bother you, but, I've always been a big tent libertarian kind of a guy, but I remember going to Rand Paul's announcement speech in Kentucky and being there and, all of the excitement that was there, but something felt wrong to me because I saw all the people that were on stage with Rand at the time who were speaking out for him. First of all, for the most part, like 90% of them I'd never even heard of. They seem like good people, but Ron Paul, who basically got Rand Paul elected in a way. If there was no Ron Paul, there would be no Rand Paul. But I felt like Rand had been surrounded by all these sort of conservative, like mainstream conservative sycophants. And while I understand like this strategy behind trying to like, you know, mainstream your message and like getting, you know, coalitions of people put together, it felt to me as if the people who had worked to get Rand elected and behind his movement had sort of been shunted to the side. And, you know, I felt it just felt sort of strange and cold. I mean, I know this is like, again, this is not the kind of this kind of emotional argumentation is not the kind of thing that libertarians go for. But something felt wrong there at the beginning when all of these sort of conservatives, these people who, it felt like there were all these people who were glomming onto him because of power. Right, so that Rand was the man of the moment, and we all want to be part of the Rand Paul campaign. I want to be part of a campaign of somebody who's running for president and can win. And I saw that at CPAC too, with all these young ditto head Republicans who are probably all now supporting Marco Rubio. But something didn't feel right. It felt like somewhere along the way that the message got lost, and that while I understand that you have to make certain compromises, it feels like Rand has lost his base. Do you think that that's true?
I think so. And I think part of it was his trying to, I think they knew they were going to lose some of the base if they were going to try to appeal to the larger right wing electorate. But I think they, cut their nose to spite their face.
But I mean, like you agree with
I expected him to posture a little bit more conservative on some issues. I expected him to hit national defense really hard because he'd been critiqued as being weak on national defense. But very quickly on, it just seemed like he was trying to pander to conservatives and then talking out the other side of his mouth to libertarians. And it's like,
can you think of an issue perhaps where that went down? For me, like I would say just the Syrian refugees thing, you know, he mm-hmm. proposed legislation to temporarily freeze the passports of French citizens and to halt, you know, all Syrian refugees. So to very anti-libertarian message. And then at odds the next day when he starts, you know, posturing on the NSA, you know, and national security. I mean, wouldn't he just be as hawkish on the NSA as he would be against Syrian refugees?
You would think so. Another one is abortion. You know, he tries to play up his religious roots and his anti-abortion stance in front of the conservatives, but you know, he drops these other cues that he's not going to touch it for libertarians and stuff, you know, and it's like, I just think he tries to have his cake and eat it too on too many issues.
Yeah, I mean, that is sort of the danger that it's just guaranteed to happen when you're trying to run for president. And I mean, you know, it's hard. It's easy for me to criticize Rand. I'm not running as a Republican. I can run in a libertarian. I'm running in a libertarian primary. So for us, we're all trying to out-liberty each other. And so there's some dangers inherent in that, you know, because I don't agree with the non-aggression principle. You know, I've got a whole sectorate of the Libertarian Party who are just, you know, anti-Austin Peterson. So I can sympathize with Rand in certain respects, but I also feel as if some of the things he advanced, he didn't actually mean. I feel like when it came to the Syrian refugees, that it came something, he was trying to out Rubio. You know, he was trying to out Chris Christie. He was trying to outdo Chris Christie when it came to libertarianism, or excuse me, when it came to national security. And I mean, he has to be Rand Paul, not be
right
Rubio. Don't you agree?
I agree. I think that, you know, again, I think he went into the campaign feeling like he had a sore spot, which was national defense. You know, the conservatives always said he was weak on national defense. So I think when these issues come up, he seizes them as an opportunity to show people just how, you know, hawkish and how concerned with security he can be. And, you know, to his credit, he always emphasizes that there's a way to protect the country while honoring our civil liberties. Right. But But you could tell he's trying to really drive home that hawkish view to appeal conservatives. And it's just not going to work because he's not Marco Rubio. He's not even Ted Cruz when it comes to national defense. So it just comes across as disingenuous.
Yeah. Well, all right. So let's kind of sideways here. Let's move on to some of the other presidential candidates. And, you know, we can obviously always include Rand in this when it's relevant. Carly Fiorina seems to, you know, she had like a splurge for a moment and then she's dropped to the bottom again. Probably time for her to drop up. Ben Carson seems to have had a little bit of a romantic, you know, the GOP seems to have had a love affair with Ben Carson that's faded. What we're really left with are who I think are probably the most credible candidates for the nomination. And I would say Trump. I have to include Trump as one of them. Cannot include the front runner. But Trump, Rubio, maybe Cruz, and Bush. Those are probably the most realistic candidates. And I say Ben Carson probably won't get it simply because I think he's ignorant on foreign policy. He's ignorant on economics. He's not a conservative when it comes to our Second Amendment rights. You know, he's really ticked off conservatives on that. And I think that the GOP probably engages in tokenism just in similar ways that the liberals do when it comes to, you know, supporting, you know, a black man or woman or just a woman because they happen to be conservative. So it's like, oh, well, let's just get behind them because they say that they're a conservative, even if they don't espouse any conservative viewpoints like we see with Donald Trump. So tell me something. Tell me, let's think about this. Do you think that... Well, here's my first question. Do you think that Donald Trump's voters would go to Cruz or would they go to Rand Paul?
I think that Ted Cruz is going to pick them up. If Trump loses them at all, they're going to go to Cruz, which, you know, Cruz has that strong nationalistic flavor. It's couched in constitutional rhetoric, unlike Donald Trump, which makes him more preferable to me. But I feel like that's an easier jump for them to go to Cruz than to Rand Paul.
But I don't think
Rand Paul's position to pick up anybody's supporters, to be brutally honest. And you know, I've been a Rand Paul supporter for years.
I know. I mean, it's possible to like Rand Paul and still not think that he's going to win. It almost feels as if like the cult of Paul is sort of, what was the word you used yesterday? That it's like, is with desperation, something, some word that you said yesterday, I thought was just absolutely perfect. That encapsulated. It's just like the fanboys are sort of, they're just kind of a losing battle. It feels like
out of touch with reality. I don't remember the exact word I used, but
yeah. Yeah, out of touch with reality. But here's my question here. Now let's contrast Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, because what really are the similarities between the two? Because I'm trying to find it. Here's Donald Trump with a progressive income tax.
Just that attitude of we're going to make America great and wave the flag and be happy about it while we're doing it. Like that's it. That's all it takes. That's why Carly Fiorina had a short stint, a little surge, because she got in the debates and was like, I love America.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you're running as a Republican for president, do you think that you can advocate any amount of socialism in the world, but as long as you say that you hate Mexicans and you want to build the border wall and deport them all, that you're a viable candidate? Is that really all that Republicans care about?
I think that there's a large faction of the Republican constituency that, you know, will drift towards whatever message, you know, hits those xenophobic, you know, concerns for them.
Yeah, no,
yes.
But I mean, you're more of a conservative. So Keith, how come you aren't all about building up a huge wall and stopping them Mexicans from taking our gerbs?
Well, because I think that the American tradition that I believe in and want to conserve is one of multinationalism. You know, we're built on, you know, we're a melting pot of different cultures. Now, I believe that immigrants should come here. They should want to work and they should want to, you know, honor the American values that we have. But I like immigration. I have nothing against immigration. As a matter of fact, as a student of economics, I know that immigration is good for our economy. It's, you know, it's good for our country. So. I'm still conservative when it comes to American values. You know, I still believe, you know, some people will laugh at me, but I am a bit of an American exceptionalist. I just think that what makes us exceptional is also the fact that we're willing to welcome people from all around the globe.
I mean, well said. And of course, there's a whole school of economics that goes up and makes these arguments about why a free market in labor is just as useful as a market for the free market in commodities. But back to the Republican presidential race. You know, you've got Donald Trump, you've got Ted Cruz, and you've got Marco Rubio. You know, you and I yesterday, we kind of settled on the fact that we thought that Marco Rubio was going to be the guy. Why do you think that that's the case?
Well, Trump has the populist support right now, but I don't think he has the ground game. And more importantly, the establishment is really stacked against him. They don't like him. You and I both know they would have stuck us with Bush if they had a chance. If anything good comes out of Donald Trump, it's going to be the fact that he torpedoed the Bush campaign, totally took the wind out of its sails. Marco Rubio is the only guy they have left, the establishment has left, to really push and who's in a position to actually win.
Right. Yeah, and Marco Rubio keeps all of the same sort of style policies that the George Bush family, that the Bush family would have brought to bear, right?
I mean, with a Latino face.
Yeah, exactly. That was the joke that I made on the Stossel show, was that, you know, between Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, policy-wise, comparably, there's not a whole lot of difference. Now, here's something that's hilarious, too. One thing that conservatives that I know that are the big Trump supporters, they say about Marco Rubio, they're like, oh, yeah, we like Marco Rubio, but the one thing we don't like about Rubio is his immigration policy. And I just have
to... Right, because he doesn't want to kick everybody out of the country.
Right, because that's the... And I laugh because I'm like, that's the only libertarian thing about Rubio.
Yep.
Look at his tax plan. Marco Rubio is not offering us a flat tax. He's not offering a reform of the IRS like Ted Cruz is or Rand Paul is.
He's very much status quo.
Very much status quo. And all he does is sort of fiddle with the tax rates, or what do you call it, the brackets, the tax brackets. And then he's introducing a tax credit for people with families. And I just, this is where I just start to hate conservatism, Keith, because they see families as a social good, and I agree with them. But then they say, well, let's subsidize them. Something that's
right, good.
It's hypocritical.
It's totally hypocritical.
Conservatism and liberalism, they all have they both have the same beliefs. That one is that everything that I like should be subsidized. Everything that I don't like should be banned. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so that's what Marco Rubio is doing he's offering us. He's offering us he's offering us a progressive income tax, just like Donald Trump. I mean,
he's offering middle class families a bribe to vote for him. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. So again, if you want a progressive income tax, you got Donald Trump. But Donald Trump, of course, the difference is that he's going to keep the Mexicans out. So if you want the Mexicans gone, you've got Trump. If you like
Donald Trump, also favors heavier involvement in the medical fields from the government. You know, government health care, which is just hugely disastrous. I mean, if there's anything we should avoid at all costs, it's having, you know, moving more towards the socialized medicine.
So does Ben Carson. Ben Carson is on the record having complained about the healthcare system, the for-profit insurance company. He said that he doesn't think that it's right that people should be profiting off of healthcare. I'm like, well, what were you doing your entire life as a neurosurgeon, profiting off of healthcare? Right? Does he think that the government should be setting the price of how much he should get for brain surgery for separating conjoined twins? Yeah, how about that, Ben?
Yeah, like you said, his economic ignorance and his inability to grasp foreign policy are really what has torpedoed him. I mean, I think the Paris attacks took whatever momentum he had going and just kind of gutted it.
Who do you think that Trump benefited from the Paris attacks?
In so much as Carson was seemingly on fire and it looked like he was going to overcome Trump, and then the Paris attack happened, and I don't think that Carson looks good on foreign policy, and I think that caused people to have a reconsider.
Not that Trump is any better on foreign policy, of course, because his foreign policy seems to be that we should nuke everyone and we should also stay away from everyone. We should also leave everything alone. So it doesn't quite make any sense to support Trump from a foreign policy perspective unless you're just
right.
Terrified. You know, the neoconservative viewpoint on foreign policy plays to everyone's fears. It plays on all of our base fears of the others.
Absolutely.
natural xenophobia that you discussed. But let's talk about foreign policy for a moment, because I don't know that there really is a simple one-size-fits-all foreign policy that could possibly be applied. Even a non-interventionist foreign policy could not potentially be applied all across the board across the United States. And I mean, well, go ahead.
This is what I've been saying for years, and libertarians have rebuked me about it, is that you can't have a hard, fast rule or a steadfast, philosophy that you apply to every foreign policy situation. Every country and every situation in the world is different. We need to be able to look at that objectively. We need to be able to weigh the cost of action with the cost of inaction. And that's what libertarians a lot of times don't consider. You know, they know that acting in foreign affairs has negative effects, yes, but not acting also has effects. So we need to be able to objectively weigh those in each situation and see if it, is in our best interest. And if it is, we act, as long as it's constitutional and Congress, I have no problem with that. I'm not a pacifist. But decide it's not in our interest, like Syria, which is a mess, if we decide it's just going to cause more problems, then we should probably leave it alone.
Yeah, I'm concerned. I mean, I go back and forth a little bit. I'm a flip-flopper on when it comes to Syria, because my instincts are very much non-interventionist, but I just don't see an option where you can't engage with someone who declares themselves your enemy, states that they are the enemy, even if you believe in the non-aggression principle, which I don't. If you believe in the non-aggression principle, then they inspired an attack here on our soil in Garland, Texas, when they attacked the Draw Muhammad cartoon rally. That to me is an act of war. So is the attacks on Paris, which to me invite retaliatory force.
And their open threats against the U.S. are also call for defense. In my mind, we don't have to actually wait for them to kill us or to detonate a bomb in America. If they say they're going to, that's good enough for me.
Absolutely.
But Syria is a tricky mess, as you know. It's a bee's nest. Actions in there with conflicting interests. I think that if we go into Syria, we have to be part of a coalition. It has to be a NATO operation. It has to be a EU thing. America cannot lead that ground operation because it's just too much of a bee's nest and we'll end up inheriting too much of the fallout.
I agree, and we've already spent $2 trillion in no-win wars in the Middle East, which don't appear to have strengthened our national security or our economic security whatsoever, Keith.
Absolutely. And can I just say, it seems pretty apparent to me that the Obama administration is more concerned with ousting Assad than they are with actually defeating ISIS. Like, if they actually wanted to work with Assad to squash ISIS, this would probably be over already. But Obama and his administration have some sort of covert agenda going on in the Middle East. I mean, we saw it with the weapon smuggling at Benghazi, the cover up over whatever happened there. Who knows what happened there to this day? We know it's not on the what happened. And then you have this mess in Syria where we were involved before we ever said we were involved. Toppling secular dictators in the Middle East is not proven to be a good solution for us. It usually ends up creating a bigger mess.
But the neocons won't say that. The neocons will say, oh, we must. No, toppling Saddam Hussein was one of the greatest things we have ever done. It was a beautiful idea. It's probably the same mentality that Obama is operating under right now, because he was trying to topple Assad, and then all of a sudden we had the rise of ISIS. So he probably said, well, I've committed myself to toppling Assad, and now we better just keep continuing on that same path of failure. So it becomes an issue of you can't change your mind. In politics, you're not allowed to change your mind because you're a flip-flopper. Well, let me just say, I reserve the right to change my mind when confronted with conflicting evidence or when situated circumstances change. A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of a simple mind. Libertarians, I think sometimes we like to demand consistency, but the world is inconsistent, and so sometimes we have to change our options. But the way the politics is, it's all about sticking your foot deeper in every quagmire. Honestly, I agree with you. In terms of a NATO coalition, that would be the right way to go. And honestly, we could engage Russia. We could actually engage Iran in order to defeat ISIS, but we'd have to do it with the aid of our allies. We could not do it alone. because, again, the United States has got to stop footing in hell for every civil war and national security issue when it comes to policing the world. We just cannot afford it. We've got way too many problems here at home. This is why they would call us an isolationist. But, I mean, seriously, can we really not focus on these domestic problems that we have? Yeah.
I know. That.
All right. All right, Keith. So we're 35 minutes in. We've actually got 11 viewers in the broadcast right now, people watching the show. So I hope you guys are enjoying it. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining our live show here. We're also going to upload this to the Freedom Report podcast, which lives at thelibertarianrepublic.com. This is a plug. Also, a quick little advertisement, just so you know, if you're listening right now, do you read the Libertarian Republic frequently? One of the things that people complain about is they don't like our advertisements. But you know what? We've actually given you an option. If you go to thelibertarianrepublic.com, on the sidebar, you'll see on the right-hand side a little button that says, do you want TLR ad-free? Do us a favor, guys. They're all 11 of you. You must be super fans. Go there and register, subscribe for a monthly membership. Not only do you get an ad-free version of TLR, but you also get all of our Liberty listicles on one page. So you don't have to scroll through the carousel in order to read all of our awesome libertarian listicles. And that would be really helpful to Keith and I so that we can keep pumping out the Liberty news for you guys from here into the future. So, yeah, so nice little advertisement there. Spadunk.
Absolutely.
Moving on. All right, so we've discussed foreign policy. We've discussed Syria. We've discussed the economic, the tax plans of the major presidential candidates in the United States. Let's talk about the Democrats for just a few minutes. Let's talk about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Is Hillary Clinton going to be the nominee? Bernie Sanders, there's no way Sanders can win.
Unless your former boss and buddy, the Judge Napolitano, is correct, and Hillary is going to be indicted next month. If she is not indicted, then I see her walking away with the nomination without a contest.
And so only an indictment could possibly stop her from being the presidential candidate. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. Which is not out of the realm of possibility.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But all of the excitement and adventure, all the excitement and activism on the left appears to be behind Bernie Sanders' campaign. I don't see anybody supporting Hillary Clinton's campaign, and the rallies for Hillary Clinton are nowhere near as big as Bernie Sanders. What gives, Keith?
Well, I read an interesting piece that told me that the who's who of the Democratic Party, the superdelegates, have pretty much already pledged to Hillary, and that there is not any math that Bernie can overcome them with, and that this is pretty much just an accepted fact among all factions, and they're just going through with this as a dog and pony show.
Do you think that Sanders could be Hillary Clinton's VP?
I doubt it. I think she has higher standards.
Oh, man. Just ticked off a million Bernie Sanders supporters. To me, it almost feels like, and like I hate to compare these two, but Bernie Sanders, it feels like, compared to Ron Paul's campaign, like a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing, in a sense, because as hard as we were trying to get Ron Paul nominated, and as hard as we, we tried to put together a real delegate strategy to win, the Republican Party just decided to say, no, we reject your delegates, and we have a shadow convention, and we nominate our own delegates, and we send them to the Republican National Convention. Probably something similar is going to happen to Bernie, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. I don't think he'll stay in very much longer after New Hampshire either. I expect him to get out and throw his support behind Hillary, unless, again, she gets indicted, and then he ends up the de facto nominee.
Yeah, because I haven't seen any of the other Democratic candidates making any headways whatsoever. I mean, who else is running? Jim Webb dropped out. He might run as an independent, which would be actually kind of exciting and interesting. Oh,
that's I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, like, Jim Webb's a pretty good guy. So
yeah. I tell you what, if it came down to, like, Trump, Clinton, Webb, I would support Webb. Easily.
Now, obviously,
Of course, I'd be voting for you, but other than that.
Right. Well, so then let's talk about this, and let's try and be objective. I'll try and take off my presidential candidate hat here, Keith, but let's talk about the Libertarian race for a moment. Have you had a chance to look at any of the other candidates that are running for the nomination, excluding Gary Johnson?
Not Gary Johnson, just Gary Johnson and yourself, to be honest with you. And I'm not sure if Gary's running this time, is he?
I don't honestly know. They say that he is, and he sort of made some steps to act like he's going to do it. I think if he is going to do it, he's probably just not running at the moment now because he doesn't want to do FEC filing, which is a nightmare hassle. Let me tell you about it. It's my first time to ever have to do this, and it's terrifying. You know, I'm trying to run my.
Is it worse than the IRS?
It's worse than the IRS, absolutely. And I'm doing everything that I can to remain in compliance while being, you know, a sort of, you know, non-moneyed, you know, non-institutional backed libertarian candidate here. I'm truly an independent and outsider, and we don't get a lot of help. If you're listening, feds, I'm trying my best to follow, be in compliance with all the laws. But all of the other candidates that are running for the Libertarian nomination, I'm not trying to talk down to them just because they're my opponents, but they don't seem to have the stuff. They don't seem to have the chutzpah that you need in order to really, you know, propel the message forward. Because, you know, even if you think that the Libertarian Party presidential candidate, you know, is not going to win, which maybe most people think that, if that's what you think, then perhaps the best candidate would be someone who can propel the message and the ideas forward. If so, I mean, be honest, Keith. Do you think that Gary Johnson's second time around, if he does run, would really do anything different?
To be completely honest with you, I don't think there's anything the Libertarian Party can do to be different. I mean, to get much more of a response than Gary Johnson got last time. I mean, Johnson is a good candidate. He is. And the guy climbed Mount Everest with a broken leg. I mean, lining up to support him. The fact is, in my honest opinion, the Libertarian Party has a bad name for most Americans. It's seen as a spoiler party.
Well, that's one thing, but I mean, Gary Johnson, you know, if he does run, you know, he's the incumbent. He's got kind of all the energy and money and grassroots, but he does have some negatives. He's seen as kind of, in terms of charisma, he's seen as sort of having being low energy, low charisma, and not having the kind of the fire in the belly that someone like a Ron Paul does, or somebody who, you know, really was able to get rallies of people activated and excited and, you know, shaking their fists.
It's a rare combination to have that personality and the substance behind it in politics.
And the experience, which Gary Johnson has experience. He's got executive experience. He's been governor of New Mexico twice, a Republican governor in a Democratic state. He's been a CEO of a multimillion-dollar construction company, and he certainly was very successful with that. He's now the head of a marijuana company, which is tracked as CBDS on the stock market, publicly traded marijuana company called Cannabis Sativa. Not just to like down my opponent here, but the stock has recently tanked. It's gone below a dollar, which purports negative things for the future of that company. I don't know how he turns around and runs for president when he's getting in very late, and he's got a company that seems to be getting burned.
I think most of these marijuana companies are kind of positioning themselves for legalization in the future, though. Right. What was it? Utah just voted down marijuana legalization, so that could have had an
I think it was Indiana.
Indiana, yep. So that could have an adverse effect on stocks like that. But those companies are, I'm not familiar with his, but there are several marijuana companies that are set up in states that aren't even legal yet. So I mean, they're just waiting for the green light, and they're going to be positioned to make a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, maybe Gary Johnson will get the last laugh. Who knows? It would be.
Can you imagine if we ended up with a president who used to run a marijuana company?
I mean, George Washington grew hemp, so
true.
I'm not sure, Keith, what's going to happen next year. It seems to me to be a mixed bag. I don't know. I mean, what are some of the possible victories for liberty that we could even see in 2016? I mean, where's our last hope? Where are our stands of liberty? What gives you hope that we'll actually be able to implement some libertarian ideas in the short term, Keith?
Well, I see small things like Rubio and Bush kind of giving their messages a little bit more of a libertarian tint. It's tiny little things you notice, but it's a lot different than it was 8 years ago. The climate in the Republican Party, you know, they the ideas of liberty are slowly permeating, I think. 2016, I don't know if we're going to have any major breakthroughs. I mean, if we end up with a five-way race or something, you know, a four-way race between, you know, an LP candidate, an independent, a Democrat, and a Republican, it could be really exciting to watch. You know, a lot of ideas might be up for, you know, discussed that otherwise might be ignored if you have that many people active in the mix. So that could be interesting.
Keith Farrell, editor-in-chief of the LibertarianRepublic.com. Thank you very much for coming on the Freedom Report podcast today. Keep stay classy, all right, buddy?
You too, Austin. Good to be here. Talk to you soon.
Great day.